the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 261.
Net Bias.
Net Bias. This is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
Phil Parada.
And Tom Lawrence.
Yes, and we named it Net Bias because this past week there was a vote.
There was.
Yeah. And the FCC guy, the head of the FCC, is it Ajit Pai?
Ajit Pai.
Did you see that mug he had?
Yes, the receipt peanut butter.
It was like a bucket. But anyway, the reason why we're saying net bias is because they ruled on, I think it was Friday, to do away with the Obama-era net neutrality rule.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So apparently it's going to be great, do great things for the internet, according
the,
to some people.
The internet overloads, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens when, we'll see what happens over the next year or two. My Netflix subscription goes up.
It's all going crazy.
Or if my Roku, you know, the thing I was worried about is that if people who have cut their cable and use either Comcast or AT&T or Cox or Time Warner, whoever you're using, and you're streaming internet contact, you're streaming shows, you know, some of that cable content through Roku versus using the provider's cable service, how is that going to impact you?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a question that I have because I did that. I cut my cable a year and a half ago. And I'm wondering if my internet is going to be, it sounds so sophisticated, if my internet is going to be adversely impacted. No, seriously, if it's going to be adversely impacted because priority will be given to their cable customers because that pipe is only so big that they've got.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I realize I've oversimplified it, but the concern is real nonetheless.
Yeah, that's where a lot of it is. And I don't think we're going to see I understand where people can be a little over the top where the sky is falling. The reality is they're not going to block access to Facebook or YouTube. That's not likely, but
do you think it's because Facebook and YouTube and Google and Netflix, they are such large companies that they have the money to foot the bill? So this won't affect us in the short term. This is more of a long-term thing. When all of the contracts need to be renegotiated, what about all of the startups that exist?
Yes.
And the bandwidth that they use.
And Tom's YouTube channel.
Yes, exactly.
Right. What is going to happen?
Most importantly.
Yes. Well, and this is, I preface my discussion with net neutrality the same. I am against net neutrality if there's competition. But because government has granted monopolies to these ISPs with, you can't start an ISP. And that's kind of the problem right now. You can't – because they have these government-granted monopolies and anti-competitive things, the other side of it is net neutrality is kind of completing that cycle.
That's a great point. And the thing
about
it is –
we wouldn't even be talking about it.
We need to move – well, we really need to take it in the same direction that the whole electrical power grid is where you've got more of a public utility type of arrangement.
And that's what Title II did.
You know. So
– yeah.
Oh, we already did that?
No. Well, we did it, and then Ajit Pai undid it. So, yes. Yeah. Title II put them in their utility regulations. And that's it's interesting because a lot of people say, well, they have to use bandwidth shaping for things like stopping malware. First, they're not stopping malware. Two, the Title II regulations did allow for bandwidth shaping. I don't know where a lot of these myths come from other than people not taking the time to read the actual Title II regulations, which I've linked it to people, but it's a lot of pages. I've taken the time to read through some of this stuff and understand it. So,
did you do Spreed?
Yes. You have to. You know how many words are in that thing?
How many?
It's like
how
a
many
Bible. Thousands? It's a lot of letters in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, a lot of words. A lot of words.
All the words.
No, but just going back to the whole public utility, I mean, it's you know, just separating the transport from the content.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you plug in your GE air conditioner into the wall, you're not getting GE electricity. You're just getting electricity.
Right.
So so data flows over the inner tubes.
Yep.
The interwebs, and it's that just isn't. I'm going to say it's not owned by anybody, but it. I mean, it is, but I mean, it's not. It's just completely out of the picture.
Other concern a lot of people have is our it's to regulate the internet, and it does not. Net neutrality in Title II is to regulate the ISPs and apply rules, but it's a regulation in the same way that the First Amendment is a regulation. I mean, the government may not interfere with free speech, and they're saying the ISPs cannot interfere with free speech. They want all packets treated equal. equal, kind of like people. Treat them all equal. There's some doctrine for that. We're mm-hmm. just applying it to the internet, and it's a more advanced version. And that's the very rational way. It's not a government picking and people think it's the government picking and choosing what packets go. Like, it's exactly the opposite. It's just saying let your network be inspected. Now, related to this is what Charter is doing right now. Now, the network inspection clause.
Charter, the cable company?
Awful, evil one. This is a bold move by Charter, and I did a video on this already to cover the details. Charter's being sued because the network neutrality clause allowed the inspection of the network. And upon inspection of the network, they said, you guys are offering 100 meg service on DOCSIS 2. DOCSIS 2, if anyone knows, doesn't support that. So they actually looked at the physical infrastructure. Their infrastructure could not support the speeds they were selling. So they got sued by the attorney general. And
U.S. attorney general or states?
States attorney general in New York. Because they're literally lying. They are selling things. And they've been selling this service to people. And it's simply – they physically don't have a network capable of delivering.
Schneiderman sues at the drop of a hat.
Well, this was – yeah. And this is where it gets even funnier is this is the rebuttal. Not that we didn't do it. Not that we're wrong. Not that this is wrong to screw people over and lie. No. Their rebuttal is to dismiss the case because of the pending, because this happened before the net neutrality vote. We recognize that Ajit Pai and the FCC is going to repeal this. Therefore, we do not recognize state authority, because with the repeal, a lot of people didn't catch this or didn't talk as much about it. They didn't just repeal net neutrality. They amended and stated that the states may not come up with their own rules. So because of that, they said, we don't recognize the state of New York's authority to prosecute us after December 14th. Therefore, we want this case dismissed.
Take that, you little state, you.
Wow. Yeah. So we're already seeing some of the inroads of it. It's a crazy problem. And yeah.
Yeah, it'll be kind of interesting to see how things pan out over the next 12 months.
I have hope because technology innovates around things. I don't know if you'd seen this, but you can look it up. Type in Motherboard Detroit. And you'll mm-hmm. find that there's a group of people, because Detroit and its impoverished areas, they're working around the internet.
Kind of a community type broadband.
They built a community internet and are wirelessly delivering internet around Detroit. The only reason it hasn't been shut down by the government is because they can't get internet in Detroit, so there's not any competitive reasons why. But this actually started a number of years ago in Oakland County with the Oakland County Wireless, and that got shut down by the lots of lobbying from Comcast, because they didn't want the networks, people providing internet without paying Comcast. So they actually lobbied against laws against sharing internet over wireless.
Very cool. I've seen similar things in several suburbs of St. Louis, Missouri, too, when I was there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So anyways, besides that, should we talk about what we did last week?
Yes. I'll go first because I have the shortest.
As if not, we'll do the entire show of this. I thought I have a problem with
I go up
rambling
to different,
on.
Yeah, well, that's all right. I'll stop it.
Right. Cut us off. Minutes. What did you do the last couple weeks?
What I did actually is, I got banned, if you can believe this. Someone as friendly and personal as myself, I got banned from a site just simply because I was pointing out truthful things facts.
Wow.
And sometimes people don't like facts.
No.
But I wasn't doing it in a horrible way, but apparently it was a fact-free zone. So I got banned. And then I discovered
the internet has a few of those.
but they banned based on my IP address. I figured out because I thought, I'll get a new account. Oh, I'm still banned. So what I ended up doing is I ended up getting a VPN. So now I have VPN service. I went with that, was it private internet? Those
now
guys?
You can go back to sharing facts.
exactly. So I went back there, and with that second account I created, I'm back in there. Well, I haven't done anything yet. I'm just plotting now. But so that was probably the biggest thing I did. So I'm very happy I had it. I mean, sometimes it's a little bit of a slowdown, but what I really appreciate about, this one, but I'm sure it is standard across most, if not all of them, is the fact that I can pick where I want to be from. I could be from England. I could be from the Midwest. Mm-hmm. I could be from anywhere.
Well, that's
just
why I moved my
line
node to Japan.
Yeah.
Is because I wanted to be Japanese, and I did a demo on how to set up your own personal VPN.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because you're such a sensei.
She's a sensei. Well, someone wrote a really cool.
I knew Phil would get a kick out of that.
Someone made a really cool script that basically you just run it. It's a Kickstart script that just you curl it in from the NHTTPS site and mm-hmm. it off GitHub, and it installs, sets up, and creates all open VPN files. It answers you a couple questions, and an apt gets the rest.
Wow,
it's really nice.
And that's a script you said?
Yeah, inch free.
Yeah, I have that set up on mine.
It's nice.
Yeah, and you go down on the your network menu, and all of a sudden there's, you know, 20 different or whatever how many setups for it. Although, you know, I was reading, I did upgrade to 17.3 Mint on my laptop, and the little screens that go by as it's doing its upgrade says they have a PIA client now.
In the repositories?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Excellent.
Well, it's got to be in the repositories because I tried looking to see if it was installed by default, and it wasn't there. So.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah.
Good. So, anyway, so that's the big thing that I did. I'm getting ready. I've downloaded, and I'm getting ready to go back to a real operating system, FreeBSD. On my laptop. I'm kidding. No, but I'm going to put GhostBSD back on my laptop just simply because I like it.
All right.
And I'm having trouble with KDE Neon on this laptop. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, when in doubt, go to BSD is what I...
Well, you tried doing an upgrade and all of a sudden KDE doesn't work.
Yeah, before the show started, I thought I'd be just smart and do this upgrade on Tom's bandwidth.
And go ahead.
And I did, and now, yeah, I'm not getting my toolbar. A few other embarrassing things, so anyway, but it won't impact my ability to do the show. That's all right. The good news. So anyway, so that's me.
All right. Phil, what's going on?
Yeah, Phil. We haven't seen you for a long time.
Well, Phil's been here. He says microphone off.
Yeah. For those weeks in a row. We found the switch.
I look down, and the button says no. my wife and I are almost done buying a house. It's our first time ever going through this entire process. It's kind of fun doing repairs on the home before we got a closing date. we've got a fantastic seller. It's one of my best friend's relatives.
Oh, that's good. Oh, cool. So you kind of know them and all.
Yeah, that makes it nice.
Because I was kind of curious how you're able to do repairs before closing. I'm thinking, wow, I never could do that. But now I understand why.
Yeah.
This house has everything that we've been looking for. There's 100 some water.
Gigabit.
I can get Comcast. And that's it.
Oh,
geez. Oh, wow. Hopefully, you know, they do everything right.
Yeah. I'll install some fiber. Then I'll get contractors out there. That's a different problem. Been building my little woodworking workshop in my garage. That's super fun. I've shaved most of the hair off of my arm testing the sharpness of my blades and stuff. Traveling for work, I've got this cool Let's Encrypt hoodie.
Yes.
And
this
Linux
us
Foundation jacket now.
Swag is outstanding.
Nerd.
Yep.
Yes. I love swag.
Yeah, I'm jealous. Is there anything? Can you get one of those for us?
Sure can try.
All right.
Do they have a store where they sell any of that? Because I will just buy it.
That's a good question.
Because if they.
We should.
You should. I mean, if that's a great way to raise money, because I will buy swag for all my staff. We wear all the swag from all the stuff we get sent.
Yeah, I think that's it's a good way to support something and also advertise it.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, if you donate money to a free open source project, that's a tax write off.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind.
To
everybody.
Anyone?
Well, as long as they're set up, a lot of them set up as a 501(c).
Yes.
Okay. I'll have to check because I donate on a fairly regular basis.
Yep. So that's how my life has been going. A lot of home related things.
Yeah.
It's fun.
So when are you scheduled to actually take possession of the said property?
Tentatively, the 22nd
of December.
Maybe. Yes,
you have a house
close.
For Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah. Keep. Hopefully the bits fall in the right order.
Mm-hmm.
The pixies arrange all the
no
electrons
packets are
correctly.
Dropped.
Yes.
And it'll be a Christmas miracle for us.
Yeah. That's what, when I bought my house I'm in, we got it on the 20th. And I spent the whole vacation of, you know, time off of work for Christmas was redoing the floors and painting the house before we could move in on the 1st.
Cool.
So, yeah.
And speaking of packets falling in place, this reminded me of something that I saw last night. I'm coming back from the Lions game on the Q line, which is the light rail. And I look up at the little display and it says DHCP config. And I'm thinking, yes, oh my God, our train's going to get a new IP address.
Yeah, it does that. There's actually many pictures of it because it does it frequently. Whatever goes wrong on it. So, which is funny because Rocket Fiber, I think, is the one that was bragging about providing internet for it.
Oh. Yes, they do.
Yeah. And so someone's misconfiguring things.
So it was pretty funny when I took a picture of it and just chuckled.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Phil, that was pretty cool. All right, Tony.
Go, Tony.
I upgraded my laptop, like I said earlier, to the new version. It went flawless.
Yep.
So you're still loving... It's so boring when you upgrade. It's not like Windows.
Yeah, I know. So you're still loving that minty goodness?
I am. Yep.
All right. How long have you been using a Linux Mint as your primary Linux distro?
4 years, I think. Good. Yeah, 4 years now. I'd used Ubuntu for like 6 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think 6 years. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's been about 10 years on my desktop. I've been using Linuxes before that, but what did I do? I don't know, not a whole lot. I've been getting ready for, I have a
You have children, interview. So we know what you've probably been doing since it's close to Christmas.
Right. I graduated yesterday. So, I walked down the aisle yesterday.
Did you have a little mortarboard hat on and all that?
A mortarboard hat?
Mortarboard.
The hat. Square.
The little hat, the graduation hat?
Yes.
Did you attach a motherboard to the top of it?
I want a motherboard.
A motherboard hat. Hey, and by the way, share the colors of EMU. Green, right?
Green and white.
That would be perfect, a motherboard hat.
There you go.
Oh, that would be that would be really clever. Like the School of Computer Science, their graduation hats would be like a motherboard shape, or I mean, not a that shape, but fun. I mean, just like the the little circuit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Actually, but being a graduate student, I had all black on, where the undergrad had green on.
Oh, they did. Okay.
So actually, it'd been better because then my black hat would stand, or the motherboard would stand out on top of my black hat.
Yeah. So. So this was a master's degree in what?
Yeah, master's in information assurance, with a focus.
And I'm
assured on
just knowing that you have
network
this.
Security. Thank you.
Very cool.
Yeah, thanks.
Did they play Pomp and Circumstance? That graduation song, you know.
I think so. I'm trying to remember, they were playing some kind of
there?
Music when
was
I first
your
walked
there?
In. Yeah, I actually had to get extra tickets from my. Other students that I knew that they didn't have everybody coming because I had like 12 people that wanted to come and you only get 6 tickets.
So
good. I was able to get enough for everybody. So yeah, it was awesome.
Cool.
And then my dad is a Vietnam vet and he was in the Air Force, worked on jet engines. So yeah, he worked on the F-4 jet engine.
I'm familiar with the F-4.
And yeah, well.
Sad to say.
Not far from Eastern is Belleville, and or the Willow Run Airport.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And they have there's a museum there, the Yankee Air Museum.
I like that museum.
Yeah, and they have an exhibit with an F-4.
Yeah, F-4 Phantoms.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were a workhorse in the Vietnam War.
Right. So what they do is anybody that's a Vietnam vet can come in and sign the wall that they have right by it. So
Vietnam
I had my
dad vet
come
or
in.
Vietnam era vet?
It's a good question. I don't know.
That's all right. I'll find out.
Yeah, you'd have to ask them.
Huh, well, that's pretty cool.
So, yeah. So my dad was able to sign his name on the wall and stuff, and it was neat.
I love aircraft engine design. It absolutely fascinates me because the way they design is very different than the way automotives design. It's a completely separate technology. So I spent an hour there, and my wife's just like, you're staring at that motor for like 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm like, do you know how cool this thing is? It's that giant one they have, the biggest one there, if you haven't been there.
Oh, yeah. It's
on its end.
What do they call it? What kind of engine?
It's a radial engine.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what's mainly different about it. But then also it has to be ultra, ultra, ultra reliable because you're up in the air, and if it fails, it's not like you can just pull off to the side of the road.
Yeah, every piece of a aircraft engine has a redundant part matching to it that operates simultaneously.
Oh, really?
Yes, I got to do the pre-flight check in my friend's plane. Mm-hmm. It was exciting. And part of going there, I made a video about it, is you switch between the different components. You actually turn off one side of the motor and turn on the other side of the motor back and forth before you take off to make sure that they work. The default is you pick one side to use, but it's kind of really interesting. It fail-safes everything. Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Automatically?
Or do you, his plane was not.
Or do you have to say, oh, my engine stopped. I got to turn on the backup engine.
Yeah, he's an IT guy, and he loves the manual nature of it. Plane's from the 60s, so it's very manual. But I'd learned that even the new planes are manual for the same reasons. They don't use electronics. They still use physical devices inside a lot of them for things like the way the fuel control. Nothing's fuel injected or anything like that, even on a modern plane.
Well, that's good because when the coronal mass ejection occurs, they'll still be able to safely land, and the electronics will.
Actually, that's what's interesting. They will survive a solar flare perfectly fine because of the lack of electronics.
That's why I wrap my house in a Mylar bag.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I want to go out and hang out with him again and just go in deep on the technical side of the engines because it turned into – me and him, we flew around and we talked about that. It's also kind of cool because we flew out of here to go to lunch somewhere in Ohio, and it's only a 15-minute flight.
Yeah.
You're like – I measured it. It would have taken 4 hours to drive where we flew to.
Wow. That's cool.
Anyways, that's not what I did, though. I did that when it was warm out in the summer. I virtualized my house, though. Oh, are you done telling? Sorry, I didn't want to ask.
Yeah, that was
it. But are you an avatar when you're in it? How does that work?
I can't wait till I can actually do that. I'm excited because technology will reach that point.
Oh, speaking of technology, have you guys seen Black Mirror?
I love Black Mirror. New episodes December 29th.
I just started watching it, so I'm in season one. Well, the pig episode, I'm thinking. That was freaky. I mean, I watched the whole thing, but it was distasteful and intriguing at the same time. So that always creates a conflict in my head.
Yes. It gets much deeper with a few of the electronics things. It's kind of like the Twilight Zone, but they take like the concepts of what if we could share all of our knowledge directly. There's an episode like that. It takes it to its deep, dark conclusion.
Oh, I like that each episode is self-contained because that kind of matches my attention span. Yes. So that's great.
They have one where you can virtualize your mind and it becomes...
Oh, really?
They take it to a dark place. And there's so many good episodes like that. There's... other than, yes, it's some R-rated stuff in there. If you're okay with that, it is a deep...
Oh, Wraith Babes in that episode two.
Yeah.
that was kind of crazy.
You know, that might be
fun. I haven't finished watching that yet,
say if all of us are in on it, this might be a fresh looks thing because it takes and looks at the dark side of technology. It might be a fun roundtable discussion.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Because it's a super popular show. Season four is coming out. Or is it season three or four?
From the list I saw that through season three.
Yep. And so season four is released in a couple of weeks. So it's fun. Anyways.
And they do it like they did House of Cards where they just drop in the entire set of episodes.
Yes. Okay. So you can binge.
So you can binge.
And
watch.
I will.
I try not to do that. Well, I stretch it out.
I don't know how not to do that.
I do baby binge watching. I'll watch one a night or something like that.
You know, in other things I may talk about in the future, because one of our popular episodes, and I think we had some listener feedback on it, was the Mr. Robot episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I did for Fresh Looks. And I finished that, the latest season of that, and it was so good. Season two was not as good. Season three killed it. Loved it again.
Yeah.
I'm in love with the show completely again.
I stopped watching it.
I just finished it the other night, too. And that last episode is gory. It's really good at the very end.
I had to stop watching it because I can't get it. I can't get all the episodes or all the seasons and watch it all at once.
We'll talk offline about that.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear a thing.
All right.
Well, thanks. I hijacked.
Yeah.
Tom, did I hijack your, what was going on?
I said something about virtualizing. Right. We went into Black Mirror. In short, I installed a Zen server at my house, and I virtualized pfSense and all the other services I run in my house into one Zen box. So I'm actually going to do a video on how you do it. Because a lot of people ask me, can you run your firewall virtually? Yes, you can. There are some things you need to do in Zen server to make that work. So
good.
I'm making a breakdown. Because pfSense, for example, does not have specific drivers for Zen for the network interfaces, you have to turn off hardware offloading. That's really the only major change.
You know, I've always wanted to, thought about it in my head, but maybe, Phil, you know a little bit more about this. The virtualizing your main firewall, I've always been leery against that because
same here.
Because the primary purpose of a firewall is to stop access from somebody coming in. Well, now if that's on a virtual machine, then the physical access hits the virtual host first before it goes on. So if there's some kind of like physical, not physical attack, but attack.
A VM escape.
VM escaping is a big concern because it would escape into everything. Now, this is one of the reasons it's a home server.
But it's fun.
But it's fun.
That's
and
right.
You can do it, and no one can tell you not to.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Although I did think about it, running it as a second firewall. So you have your primary firewall for your network, and then you have another firewall that firewalls off the the VMs.
And that's actually
a
very popular use case for that is to control internal routing. And I also created a very in-depth video for my entire top-to-bottom virtual lab setup and how I do all my VLANs, how I do all of my security, and how you can create lab environments. Was one of the videos I created that's doing really well because I get deeply technical because I want people to be able to set this thing up.
At a previous job, Tony, we did something like that. We had a Cisco firewall in place as the primary entrance into the company's network. And then running on top of a Zen server, we also had a PFSense VM to segregate internal services. It was pretty cool.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Running as my primary, I put a dedicated extra network card in it just handles that. So the WAN is attached. So if there was some type of attack, there is no other IP address assigned to that WAN. It only is accepting traffic and piping it directly to the PFSense. And if the PFSense is shut down, that network card goes with it. So it's on, but you know what I mean? There's nothing routable on it. So that's kind of how I did my segregation on it. But you're right, the escaping the VM is always a concern because if they do figure out a way to get into
PFSense. Is that easy to do?
No, and it's the holy grail of money paid out for flaws.
Okay.
CubesOS has a similar concept. CubesOS runs with Zen as its hypervisor. So then you have a sys firewall VM and then a sysnet VM. The
Dom
net,
zero.
Dom zero is what everything will run on top of, and then all of my virtual machines will need to talk through the sys firewall, and then the firewall talks through the sysnet to get out to the greater internet. So if I shut those down, then all my VMs don't have an internet access, so I could use it in an airport, in a coffee shop, without being online and be assured of that. Mm-hmm. It's pretty nifty. And then you can pick and choose which VMs you want to go out through other VMs. Routing is fun.
Yes.
And I think Cubes just announced their third release candidate a few weeks ago.
For 4.0 RC3, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think they're going to come out with the production release later this month, I believe. So I'm planning on taking another look at it as a review. So hopefully you'll be there for that. I think it'd be a very interesting Fresh Looks episode.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, because I remember I did the Cubes 2.0 when that first came out, and it's come a long way.
Should we have a compare and contrast review of this?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because with the Semibug guys, Southeast Michigan BSD user group, we're going to be doing that with Cubes and OpenBSD, which is kind of
nice.
Oh,
yeah.
That's something I did. I presented at your group.
Oh, yeah. Did we have a –
no.
Was that after?
That was after because it was we did it. We recorded Sunday, and I did it that Tuesday.
Yeah. I know. Very well received, Tom. It was very interesting.
That's actually a fun topic as well because I got to confirm this to be absolutely true, but I'll state it like fact. I may be able to say it louder because that – I've become friends with the developers over at the PFSense, and I've had some great dialogue with them. They're really strong on their product as far as being interactive with listening to feedback. But they also now retweet my videos on PFSense, which makes me happy.
That
now, they
good.
Won't – my understanding is they won't do that unless there's accuracy. And they
funny how that is.
They've talked about
facts,
that.
Facts, you mean? Fact-based?
They care a lot about facts. Yeah. And that's what got me that's what got me involved with them and got to know them because they said something wasn't fact and we got an argument because they did not like me at first. But I called them out on something that was a minor oversight, but they shipped me a product with a beta firmware on it. And I reviewed their product and they said my review was wrong because those features exist. And I'm like, no, they don't. And they cleared it up and had a firmware release. And I said, well, you shipped me a product that has a description different than the firmware it was shipped with. So... Mm. But they were very quick to fix it. They were very honest, and they understood the mistake. But they started with, I was wrong.
You're technically correct, and that's the best kind of correct.
I love technically correct. Well, they brought into question my testing processes. So I made a video about how I do my testing processes, which is actually good. That's how I do my testing turned out to be a popular video, which led to my virtual lab video. So those are people want to know how I set things up. And I think that's important. We try to be very clear on how I'm doing my testing, because the results obviously can be influenced by poor testing practices. Like I could say, hey, it's not routing gigabit. Oh, by the way, I didn't have a gigabit router plugged into it. So I guess it wasn't the firewall. There's a lot of people I've seen do that. You look at the connection speeds in their dialogue, you're like, yeah. So
great.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We're gonna move on because we have now talked a lot.
We're gonna
we missed Phil.
We're driving the open source buggy back on the trail. All right, so what do we got coming up next? But Tom, that was interesting, though. That's very cool.
Next is...
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
Feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And...
It was great timing.
Too.
Yeah.
We'll start out with Tom. Tom uploaded the wrong file for last week's episode, and we'll get that fixed. We'll nip that one right now.
For those of you who want to listen to me review Arch Labs Linux again, before Tom changes it, you're more than welcome to. Otherwise, we're going to be uploading, which one?
Shark.
That's right.
I plan to find the shark because we jumped the shark.
We did jump.
We jumped the shark somehow and went to the wrong review.
Yeah,
we will get this fixed.
So not to worry. Not to worry, folks. Tom's on it. Tom's.
All right.
What else we got going as far as listener feedback?
We had a few more. Scott Dowdle, a longtime listener, he made a comment about how...
How I was trashing something? No.
No, about the demise of Linux Journal.
He says that
Linux Journal went digital only in August of 2011.
I remember that when it did. I thought it was going to probably, go.
And that, Mary, you are correct, that Linux Journal has never included optical media disks.
Ooh, Mary was right.
So, and then on number two, he says Linux Journal did sell archive CDs that had the past episodes on them.
Yep, I remember that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Let's see, there was one more.
We got an email from... Raymond, about Quad 8, I believe it's called.
Quad 9.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, yeah, that was the upgrade, yeah.
The DNS service that IBM launched. This gentleman lives more northern than we are, and he uses it to help ignore... malware infections.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We started testing
that's
it.
That's about as vague as you can get.
We've actually been
that's
testing
it. That's what it says.
Yeah. No, so I'm giving you our
they mentioned that that we did mention on a show, and I purposely, because I didn't have enough details about it, we moved right into testing the system over almost 2 months. As soon as it got in beta, we jumped right on it and started testing it. We dog food a lot of things, so we switched all of our DNS internally here. To that.
To Quad 9?
Yeah, to Quad 9. And we wanted to see what happened with some of the malware computers that come in and things like that.
How did it perform?
So far, we haven't found much. And that's part of the problem. It's really hard to test DNS because it just doesn't resolve things on there. So we, unfortunately, I know.
Well, you couldn't resolve the problem.
I will report it from a functional standpoint. We've had absolutely zero issues with our network. But I don't have, it's just the way the logging doesn't tell me all the failures that well.
Oh.
So that's what I kind of needed to do. And I mostly just tested to make sure functionality and speed, and it's been absolutely flawless. We actually eliminated the other DNS servers. We only are using the single 999 DNS server. Mm. Wow. Now, it uses the magic of BGP to create high availability with only a single DNS. We're used to having multiple DNS servers. They use some routing magic to give it availability everywhere with a single IP.
It's multicast.
Okay, multicast.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
Anycast.
Anycast.
It's an Anycast IP.
One of those casts.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's actually really common.
It is.
Most of the large providers have something like that Anycast set up for, Google uses it. And
it just seemed
Facebook
to be the discussion point people
Netflix,
kept.
Netflix.
kept having was that there's only a single IP, so it's like one thing for failure, and I'm like, hey, it doesn't exactly equate to that now.
Because, right.
Yeah.
They have last I heard, I think they have. I'm going to get the numbers wrong. Something like 70 servers online right now globally, and their goal is to have like 150 or something like that.
So they're really up in the amount of servers.
I said servers. That's wrong. Point of presence.
Point of presence.
Pops.
Yeah. Yes. So each point of presence can have hundreds of servers behind it. So currently they have 70, and they're going to go to 150 worldwide.
I remember when they just had three.
Uh-huh.
Pop 3.
Oh.
It was bad.
So, yes, definitely so far I can't see any reason not to use it. So it's just hard to get really good statistics because I don't have – it's hard to figure out what malware just didn't resolve because malware doesn't resolve all the time. So I have to kind of like do an A-B comparison and create a differential log in it. I never got around – I was going to. I really had the best of intentions
on it. You have so much time on your hands, Tom. I don't understand why you didn't get to it.
What's neat about Quad9 is that if you're going to do in-depth testing – and you have like a known failure or a known like blocking, then they have another server that you can hit that is not blocking, and then you can test against that to see what the differences are.
Yes.
Is it 9.9.10 or something like that?
Something like that. And other people have tested it. So that's kind of the other reason once other people beat me to the punch because they're better at doing this. And we, oddly enough, in our retail stores, not have much malware come in. So
that's good. Yeah. The one other thing is that it just left my mind.
I saw it.
We received a donation from John. So thank you very much, John.
Yeah,
we
were just getting to that. That is greatly appreciated.
Yes.
What I was going to say is that because of the pops are only about half built out, then you might be in a spot that doesn't have quite as good of a connection. So another DNS server might be a little bit faster than what Quad9 is right now. It just all depends on exactly where you live. But anyway, so we got a donation, which is awesome. Thank you very much. Yeah. What else do we have?
I guess
there was one about a Raspberry Pi.
I did see that.
Steve. Yep. So he's he just got back into Linux and has been listening to us, so that's awesome. Thank you. He's looking at getting a new Raspberry Pi for his son. So then the old Pi that they've been playing with, he was looking for a project. So I suggested of making a backup server with it. Because being an old Pi, it's not going to be fast to do desktop stuff or whatever you want to do. So backup's awesome because it can just sit there and data can trickle to it and you don't you really need to rely on performance. So, yeah. And I say backup Pi, I mean, it's a backup server that you can just send your data to and whatnot.
Yeah, so you'd have several hard drives just plugged into that then?
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
And so he said he has both Windows and Linux computers. So I had suggested to use rsync. And then there's a couple different rsync clients for Windows, where in Linux it's built in. You just have a script to run it. I sent him the link to Delta Copy because that was one that looked decent and it was free to use.
Yeah. Good job.
Thanks. What else?
I guess that's any other email that we got.
Yeah, that's the only things that I've had in the past week or two.
I think those are the things that I
actually had one more. I'm trying to it was from Billy about .NET Core. Is it really likes the show and appreciate it.
What was that?
Can
you spell that?
He says he doesn't want to be skeptical. In .NET Core, he went to make the Hello World and saw what I'm pretty sure Tom said is it takes a lot more work to make a Hello World in .NET Core than it is in most other languages.
Okay. There's a really interesting GitHub project that I like. It's called Enterprise FizzBuzz. It's a goofy little Java thing.
FizzBuzz. I think I've heard of that.
It's a very intro programming test that they give that some companies will give a new developer just to see if they can write code.
Oh, you know what? It was at PenguinCon, and they had the coding class to do that, to write FizzBuzz or something. I think that's what they did. They gave us a little bit of stuff, and then we had to produce FizzBuzz. So luckily, I was sitting next to Ruth, my friend Ruth. She FizzBuzzed for me. So, all right.
Mm-hmm. There was one more comment on the website, and it was... all it says is,
first
here
of all,
it is.
Oh, okay. What
it's
was it?
The new episode for the Sunday morning Microsoft review. And that was one of our favorites, how Microsoft gets Git.
Oh, yeah.
But
somebody didn't like the fact that it was.
It was more, yeah, it was the Microsoft based episode. But.
Well, it's.
Yeah.
Well, I think that gets Git, that episode was kind of interesting. I think it'd be interesting just to general folks, but
yeah, I mean, sees open source saying to mainstream. This is I don't understand. We won. We're winning. We're seeing open source in more places. If you're an open source advocate, that makes you happy. Even if it's Microsoft doing it, whoever's doing it, it's open source. If Microsoft decides they don't want to do it, then we won't like them no more.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's that. So is that the end of our listener feedback?
I think so.
Good.
All right. And we're going on to
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
Distro Fever.
Yes.
And I see quite a few that's come out the last few weeks.
Yeah, I did a little checking out of some stuff here. And of course, you know that I had my laptop problem, but I did take the time to jot a few notes down earlier today and yesterday. So. One thing, I know TrueOS has come out with their latest production version. Tony, will you share the version number with us? TrueOS.
TrueOS.
Do you have it there on DistroWatch?
I just scrolled past it. Let's see.
That's all right.
It is.
The reason
17.12.
Why yep. So it's kind of a major release. And, you know, they use the Lumina desktop. Now, I haven't really checked this out. I checked it out maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. When Lumina was really in its early stages, so I think it's probably a little more developed. But what caught my eye about TrueOS's release is that they now are managing removable devices through something called the Auto Mounter Service. And what happens is devices are they're announced as available to the system via the .desktop shortcut in / media. And so these shortcuts may contain a variety of optional actions that may be performed on the device. So what happens, and this is what I found kind of interesting about it, is that devices are only mounted while they're being used, such as when browsing via the command line or file manager. But they're automatically unmounted as soon as they stop being accessed.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and then they've got integrated support for all major file systems, UFS, of course, EXT, FAT, NTFS, XFAT, et cetera. So, and they said the Lumina desktop is the only desktop that supports this functionality at the present time. So I suppose the functionality will may be ported to other desktops, but or other systems, but right now TrueOS is using that, which I thought was kind of interesting because the fact to mount it and unmount it automatically like that, I guess, you know, maybe a feature I think that some people will find very useful.
I'm excited about just below that, FreeNAS.
Yeah, I saw that. That, and I thought, oh, Tom's going to talk about that. So
that's my project for today. I have not regretted this decision yet. When they have new releases, I update my production servers right away. And so far, none of these things have ended in regret.
Hey. So
we'll see. I still run backups before I do anything. Everything gets backed up.
So they're announcing cloud integration?
They've done some of it and are doing some more. I haven't gotten into details of that particular thing. That interests me. I have a few clients that have some special projects they want to do with FreeNAS where they want it synchronized off-site with, like, archiving things on AWS or what do you call that? Glacier. Glacier. And I have the same project I want to do. I don't know what to do with all my videos, but I don't know. I'm going to fill this building up with hard drives if I keep trying to keep them all, because I create terabytes of data. And
Glacier.
I may just put them on Glacier.
I've got stuff out there that I hardly ever use. I put some videos out there that I don't really access frequently, but I want to just have a backup of them sitting somewhere.
Yeah, I was thinking about either Glacier or...
It's relatively inexpensive.
Or Tarsnap. I was thinking try to figure out one of the two to set up.
Tarsnap might be a good one, just because...
I know I want to play with Tarsnap as well.
Yeah.
I bought the book.
Well, what I'm really interested is the dedupe and and compression that it does along with encrypting and before it even sends it out.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. So that's cool. FreeNAS.
Yep. FreeNAS. And they updated they have a beta interface, and so they had the debacle that was FreeNAS 10, and what they did with they went back to the normal interface, but then set up, you can log in at the beta interface. That's one of the big updates to this FreeNAS version is that. So that's, I want to take a look and see how much improved. It is really pretty. Like, it's a nice, I think it's built in Angular.
I think it was. I believe that was a previous episode that we called Corralling Corral. Yes. that was so goofy.
That was a big back eye. That's like the era that didn't exist.
I'm running 11 at home, FreeNAS 11, and I've tried the beta, and it's just like half the functionality wasn't there.
Yeah, so they're missing a lot of things.
That's what I'm excited about, doing the upgrade and checking it out.
I didn't say it worked well. It just looks pretty.
Yeah,
it's all for show.
Just another pretty.
It's not a pretty interface.
Another pretty Linux, interface.
Linux Mint had its 18.3 update, and now
I think Tony, and he's on it, right?
Yeah.
It now supports KDE, so that's exciting.
He's not on that.
No. I did saw the Cinnamon update.
I saw that, and I thought, I should maybe give it a try. Did you give it a try?
I have deployed KDE with Cinnamon to so many laptops and desktops in the past
KDE
couple weeks.
KDE with Cinnamon.
I think you meant
Linux Mint with Cinnamon. Sorry, I'm staring at the word. Yeah, I'm staring at KDE right now, so it's the forefront of my mind.
Right.
It was the Cinnamon Timbits that did it.
Oh, so tasty. Okay.
All right. But, so I saw that, and I thought, I should maybe download and just take a look at it, because he's always... Just all excited
it.
About.
Yeah.
What you really like is, you like Linux Mint, but I think you like the Cinnamon interface, which I will admit, even though I'm a KDE fangirl, that that interface is really kind of clean and neat looking. Mm-hmm. And everything, there's a space for everything and everything in its space, so it's pretty well organized.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, what I really like about it is how it's unique, yet it's still... operates under the same workflow that my other computers do, my Windows computers.
And that's important for efficiency.
Yeah, because I need to be, to have to switch between mindsets of how I'm using which computer just makes it hard for me. And I'd rather just something that works and it works easy.
I hear you. Phil. And so that's kind of cool.
Another goofy thing that I saw was Puppy Linux. 7.5 just came out.
Yeah.
And on the little picture of it, It says Xenial Pup, and then there's a picture of a squirrel.
Yeah.
Or a dog in a squirrel costume.
Oh, could
there
be.
You go. That, there you go.
We'll go with that one.
Hey, and speaking of distros, I want to give a little shout out to Orok, which is listed out there now. What I liked about them is, well, first of all, it's an Iraqi Linux distro, which is a little unusual.
Yeah, I was looking at that.
They're based on Triskel, so they've only got free software.
Stallman
open
approves.
Source. Yeah, Stallman approved software.
Really?
But here's what I liked about their site is they have a little audio file there on their website that you can play to understand how to pronounce the name of their distro. And I just thought that was so great that I wanted to mention that.
Yeah.
So that's how I knew it was not Uruk, it's Orok.
I was sitting here thinking it was Uruk-hai from Lord of the Rings, the big warrior orcs.
Orok. Yeah, no, it's Orok and not Uruk. Mm. So.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's based on Triskel, then it uses the Linux Libre kernel version 7. or no, and version 7 of the GCC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they, I think it was their site too, they had the convenience of you could just click what language you wanted to see their site in. Hmm. And they had, you know, they, of course, you could get Iraqi or whatever the language is there, but German, French, English, Spanish, whatever. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yep. And then there's React OS, which is, of course, is on that quest to be compatible with Windows binaries or to kind of be a Windows OS.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. I've never downloaded it, never installed it, never, at least I don't recall. But they do have, I went and took a look at what they've got available, and they have a they have an application manager there where you can kind of like it reminded me of the Ubuntu Software Center, but it's a little scaled back. Hmm. It's not as pretty, you know, with all the big cool pictures. But you can just simply go into the sections and check off what you want and then install it. So they have that type of thing. But what you're really installing are not really Windows programs. You're just installing things like Abbey Word or you know, the typical Linux type programs, but it's, you know, taking care of it for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would guess it's still the Windows binary that you're, that it's downloading, installing it, but it's the open source, whatever list. So it runs just like a repository, like what Linux repositories would have.
Tony. I didn't really take that much of a look, but yeah, that's a good point. So those are, you know, as far as what DistroWatch had, on their list, those are the things that kind of caught my eye.
You know what would be interesting is, I mean, I don't want to discredit what React is doing, but it'd be interesting to have something like a Ubuntu-based Linux distro that has Wine or Play on Linux or something built in, like that is so, you know, taken away from the user that you don't really use it. And if you wanted to install something, a Windows based something, then you just say install it and it installs it just like anything else, and it's just abstracted away from the user. Then you can run either Windows or Linux or whatever you wanted.
Some OSs where, you know, any kind of dependencies or libraries are all self-contained and it's stuck in a single directory. Mm-hmm. So you could, in theory, then, you know, do something like that, perhaps. Yeah. I don't know.
Hmm. Anyway, I see that Peppermint has a release.
Great time of the year for it, too.
Yeah.
I say.
Peppermint's always been intriguing to me because it's been like the original Chrome OS, kind of. Where it's a Linux based, but then most of the applications you use is all cloud based stuff.
I think I did a review years ago on it, maybe about 4 years ago, on Peppermint. So shoot, might be time to take another look at it. Boy, I almost have my list for the next five fresh looks.
Yeah, we got some distro reviews.
Yeah, we got some coming out.
Cube's next though, I think, because I have not actually played with it. I'm excited to think about playing with it. So I'll change to it. Phil likes it, so
I like it. I got.
And you're
got
doing used the. You're using ports. The Fedora based with the Fedora underpinnings, or did you do Debian?
I've tried both. I prefer the Fedora ones. However, on Cube's 3.2, you can only get up to Fedora 25. Now, Cube's 4, I think you can get up to 27 currently, but they're not releasing new Fedoras for the current stable. Stable cubes.
Okay.
That's not to discredit the project. It's been, it's awesome so far. I like the security aspects of it.
Good.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. Anything else on the distro front?
That's all I saw.
Anyone?
So moving on to
tech news and views.
Tech news.
Things happened.
Did happen.
We're going to not address again the news we had at the beginning that we got the topic on.
Actually, is anybody playing? Did anybody play Taps on the 15th of December?
I did not.
I tapped on my keyboard a couple of times.
Taps. There you go. AOL Instant Messenger AIM was discontinued. Silenced. That was yep.
But my
that
status.
Was, huh?
But my status is.
What your last status? That's your memorial.
Yeah.
I don't remember what my last status was. I got off it so long ago.
Oh, man. So that, yes.
You know, I tried using it about a year ago because the guy I get my computer hardware and network hardware from, he says that's what he primarily uses. And if I wanted to be able to get to him when he doesn't have cell signal and stuff, then that's best. Okay. I tried setting that up on my phone, and it was impossible to finish. There was one feature I didn't want to turn on, and it would not let me move forward. Like, I can't remember now. It's been a year. But it was something like to set up two-factor, I had to go to my computer and something else, and I just didn't want to have to go through all that. So
two-factor
I just
factor aim.
Gave up on it. Yeah.
It's the end of an era. I grew up with that as a kid and a teenager. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, right?
Yeah. Phil got it.
The what?
ASL. That was always the opening line, everyone. Age, sex, location.
Because it's the internet. You have to know. And no one lies on the internet.
No. No, not at all.
Right.
Only facts.
Yeah. So
it was the first instant message that I used. Mm-hmm. But I rarely used it. At that time, I just didn't talk to people online.
Yeah, and I just didn't. None of my friends, they just weren't internet savvy back then, so I had it, but I wasn't talking to anybody, kind of like you, Tony. Yeah. You know, so anyway, but that was one thing I noted. And then there's always the obligatory end-of-the-year article on Linux successes and failures in 2017.
I only want to hear about success.
Huh? You only want to hear about success? All right, let's see here. Linux desktop. Oh, it's in failures. No, just kidding. That's a joke. That was a joke.
You made the 2%.
I know.
I'm pulling my weight.
I know you did. Yeah. Did you say that after we started about all the... Yeah, it was after we started recording about all the installs you're doing.
Yeah, it's fun. Every time that I install Linux on a laptop or a desktop...
An angel gets its wings. No.
A penguin gets its wings.
Yes.
A penguin gets its wings. there you go.
It's one more computer that I don't have to fix in the future.
You
set it to do its security upgrades and other low-risk things. Turn on the firewall. Away they go.
Yep.
Yeah.
I made that one up, as you know, but Phil, I think you just you took it and ran with it very professionally, so I appreciate that. But they claim the article also claimed, and this was in Datamation, by the way, so you know we know it must be true. Linux gaming, that was in the Linux success category.
Yes,
I would say so. Yeah.
I mean, and they listed things like XCOM 2, Tomb Raider, Mad Max, Total War, Warhammer. Certainly at the top of my list of games to play. Oh, but
we've been playing Divinity: Original Sin. It runs on Linux and it runs great.
Really? Is that like a first person? See, the games I hate are first person shooter games.
It's a 3D RPG, turn based. Tons of fun.
Million.
I think we picked it up on a sale for like.
Are there guns involved?
$10. Nope. Swords, magic.
Oh, okay. All right. That's a little
RPG,
better.
RPG role playing.
Playing game. Okay, I got it.
This
I knew that.
The past 2 years, I've been doing all of my gaming on Linux.
And
it's working.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because they talk about, of course, the Steam platform, which is, I've got that. And I think when I did the, and it's going to be released in one of our Fresh Looks episodes coming up, but the Red Core Linux, Steam came with it already in place, so I logged in and played around with it a little bit. But and of course, is it GOG, GOG.com?
Good Old Games, yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that what that stands for?
Yes, it does. Mm. Good Old Games is fantastic.
I got to go out there. You know, I think they had this puzzle game that I really got into on Android. It was...
Bejeweled?
No.
Was it the paperclip one?
No, it was a puzzle. It wasn't that. I refuse... I'm losing my street cred here, right in front of your very eyes. No, I thought it was GOG that did... it was like this rocket ship, and you had to force the steam through these pipes, and you had to move the pipes. It was really cool. It was that. Although I will admit to have played Bejeweled a little bit, and I thought this game never ends. I'm out of here. So anyway, so that was listed as one of the winners, and then of course another Linux win this year, according to the article, was Linux Docker and Kubernetes, which I think we all can agree with. Let's take a look at the losses, the Linux failures. That sounds like such an oxymoron, doesn't it? Oxymoron? Depends on the accent.
We can't get better without failing a whole lot.
Yeah, that's true. That's, God, Phil, it's so good to have you here.
Most of my days, I just fail all over the place. Sometimes I'll do something right.
Yeah, and they talk about marketing and presence within online marketplaces, I guess. Big box, you know, just in terms of getting, I think, Linux systems out there. I mean, you can certainly go to System 76. You can go to Zareason or some of those other Linux sites that sell laptops. But just get aside from Chromebook, which almost doesn't count.
You're talking about for the desktop market or for like the consumer
market.
Yeah,
so I guess the Linux desktop did fail. No, I'm kidding. It's in that list. And then legacy software hurdles. They said this has continued to be a tough one. Trying to get a Photoshop user, someone who has extensive work with Microsoft Excel spreadsheets to utilize open source alternatives on Linux simply isn't going to happen. And I tend to agree with that because I use Microsoft Word. I do like LibreOffice, and it does a lot of the standard typical things pretty well. Yeah. But there are some functions in Word that don't translate well in LibreOffice.
No, I've run the same
and
thing.
And it's unfortunate. It doesn't take away from the fact that LibreOffice handles probably about 80% of what I need to do, but there are just certain things that
There's been people who are like writers I've talked to, like they're using a lot of the advanced functions, and there's not a parity of functions. It's not like they have to learn something new. The functions they use, the way they link to documents, just it's not in there.
Yeah.
And even we were having some trouble. I remember something we were trying to do because Marvin, who works for me, is really talented at Excel, couldn't do it in LibreOffice, but he was able to do it with Google Docs. Google Docs had the functionality. I don't remember what it was, but it is a problem. And when it comes to Photoshop, I'm sorry, nothing beats it. I have really spent the last 6 months learning GIMP, and I still can't love it. It still just doesn't do some things easily. It's so many more steps, and it's not that I don't understand that. It literally is like six steps for something that's a single checkbox in Photoshop. It just has a long way to go.
Mm.
It's a fatigue issue.
Yeah. It takes me longer to
click
get things
fatigue.
Done. Yeah. And that adds up. I mean, you say, oh, it's only six more steps, but you add up how many times I repeat a function and how much I do. Anything I can do to reduce my workflow is the goal.
Yeah. No, and that makes sense. There was another, but speaking of Microsoft Office and that type of thing, I think you guys, we briefly touched on this, and I'll make another mention of it now, Tom, because I know you may have had it for your news items, but Office 365 is going to be ported to Chromebooks. And so of course, and this came, I pulled this off of ZDNet.com, and they said, so that'll just challenge Windows laptops. Why would you have a Windows laptop if you can, if you're a user of Office, why would you even bother?
This actually challenges the Windows 10S that they were working on as well. Because the same thing, because it was this concept. But Microsoft is self-aware little bit when you leave the Redmond filter bubble. But they're realizing that Chrome is the number one used application on Windows, like hands down. So because of that, I think they're just kind of submitting to it. Like you can't load Chrome on their cut-down Windows 10S boxes.
Well, and this was Stephen Von Nichols who had this. I think it was on the 13th, and he said, "There's just what reason is there to stick with Windows?"
My kids don't think about Windows at all. They use Google Classroom for everything. Matter of fact, almost all the school districts have moved to it. There's one that hasn't yet, and they're actively looking at it for next year. Moving their next school session will be in Google Classroom. They're all in on that.
And then the last one I have. Is Microsoft quietly snuck an SSH client and server into the latest Windows 10 update?
I seen Snover quietly tweeting about it. I had liked his comment. So.
Yeah, so I think they initially announced back in June, I think it was of 2015, that they were planning on or intending to bring open SSH at the time.
Yeah,
and of course I've gone ahead and put it in. I think in its beta form right now, so that it's there, but it's not. I don't think it's automatically installed, but it's available.
I think you have to install it the same as you would install like the Telnet
other,
client.
Yeah. Any other type of okay?
Yeah. Well, actually, I believe you install it through the store apps. And I was aggravated that their decision not to have the Telnet client default installed.
It's so useful for testing ports.
I
agree.
Exactly. Yeah. I test ports all the time, and I can't now because I got to go through too many steps to do it.
Click fatigue. Yeah.
Is click fatigue again?
Oh, it is.
My finger, I mean, it gets so tired, I'll tell you. It just.
You know, I tell you, like the Jetsons, we spend so much time nexting, yesing through things. Like,
yeah.
Some of the enterprise install software, we like 17 clicks for one of them. We're like, why? This is just an update. There was 17 yeses for an update. Just load it. Like, we know. We downloaded this purposefully and executed it purposefully. Mm-hmm. Just.
What are you sure?
Yeah, and just to wrap up this particular news item, though, but the author, he said that he went ahead and installed it, and there are some wrinkles. You know, of course, it's a beta, so there are going to be some wrinkles that need to be worked out. He said that but it's a sign. It's another little sign that Microsoft has continued to embrace the wider world beyond Windows. He doesn't expect it's going to become the main tool for the administration of Windows machines anytime soon, but the fact that it's there. It's certainly a, you know, certainly a start. So, and that's what I had. And by the way, he ends his article with, "For now, though, I'm going to stick with PuTTY because PuTTY actually works."
Yeah.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, I use PuTTY all the time at work.
Yeah,
I like it.
A few years ago, when I was actually working, I put PuTTY on my work machine just to see if I could. I could get it to work and everything. Yeah, it was really pretty cool to do. It was very easy to connect.
Yeah, PuTTY's really nice because it's easy and fast. Just need a quick connection.
And it follows, I think, the Unix, philosophy, which is one tool and do it well.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's still a few flaws that PuTTY has, but
do it kind of well.
if you're a heavy SSH user for many, many machines, then there's better tools out there. But for... you know, for quick connections or maybe if you only connect to the same like 10 servers, then it's awesome.
All right. That's all my news. Tom, did I take away half your news?
No. You want me to rip through the list real quick?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
1.4 billion is a great number, unless it's passwords in clear text and a single database that you can find a torrent for.
Then it's not so wonderful.
I feel like I need to remind everybody, unique passwords.
Unique passwords are important. Mm-hmm. And because people think their passwords are unique, there is some interesting information in this, and I'll link it below. But my favorite thing to come out of these giant password dumps? The more we aggregate passwords together, the more we realize they're all the same. And we get to learn what 28% of the passwords
were. The hive mind.
Well, you can go back and look and, you know, whether the count – they have the counts and breakdowns in this article because someone took the database and analyzed it and said, what are the common passwords? No, you are not clever when you typed Q-W-E-R-T-Y, which makes number 3. They have a top 20 list of the passwords. 654321 is number 20. It kind of surprised me. Monkey's missing from the list, and for a long time, monkey used to make the top 20. I don't know why a lot of people choose it as their password. I'll admit to never having chose monkey as my password.
I never have either. I use an algorithm.
Monkey missing from the list would be a good password.
For password creation.
Password's number 4, and number 1 is 123456. But, you know, because we added length requirements, mm-hmm. number 2 is 123456789. So it's a fun breakdown, and it's fun to play with. Actually, I'm sorry, they have the top 40 in here and scrolling the list. But there's some analytics they applied to this mass of passwords. So we already knew there are passwords out there. There's been so many breaches. So someone aggregated all the breaches into a single database. That's all this is really about. It's not about, it's not anything new. It's just aggregation. Vast open source, it's machine code decompiler. Now, this is interesting because it lets you reverse engineer things, and Avast is open sourcing it. Now, there's limited support for 64-bit, but apparently that is on the roadmap for things that will be released as well. So I thought that was kind of clever. Now, I've been preoccupied with worrying about future stuff in like quantum computers for no reason. And I don't know side-related note that made me deep dive into this was Microsoft released their new operating system development tools for quantum computers.
Oh, I think I saw that article.
We were actually there when the announcement was made.
Oh, that's probably why I saw
it. We were sitting in front of the stage at Microsoft announcing all this. But it was so.
I was busy running Ubuntu in a virtual machine during that session.
And the whole concept of most of the like the Diffie-Hellman key exchange is it's really hard to reverse engineer the mod discrete algorithm that creates that exchange so we can have our cryptography. But that's really hard for computers now, and it's simplistic. And well, not simplistic because quantum computers are really complicated. But when we figure them out, it will break that, and it'll break a lot of encryption. But don't worry, there is already, and I was happy to learn this because it makes the future bright again, there is post-quantum computer era cryptography standards. And I did not know. Someone's already figured out how quantum computers can crack cryptography once they figure them out and how what cryptography we can create that quantum computers can't crack, and they have new standards on NIST for it that are in beta, but they're in review. Mm. And so there's a breakdown. If you care about deep mathematics and, or just...
I do.
Yeah, or it's what you want to read at 6 a.m. when you're drinking a coffee and... making sure the world's not going to break. So it was interesting to read because it makes me worry about cryptocurrency because, you know, it hit like $18,000 of Bitcoin the other day. So, yeah.
Oh, we're in such a bubble.
We're in such a bubble. But
my sister, God love her, she emails or texts me and asks me if I've invested in Bitcoin yet. And I thought, hell no. I'm not going to. Everyone only wishes they had.
So.
I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
It's in total bubble status right now. I mean, you take a look at the price chart of that thing, and it's a hockey stick.
Well, and the other concern, Willie, is what if they find a flaw in it?
On a melting ice rink.
In cryptocurrency, if they find a flaw in cryptocurrency, that cryptocurrency immediately loses value. So that's a whole other topic there.
But I'm going to tell her to get her original investment out, and then whatever she gets after that is just gravy.
Yeah. I know some people made a lot of money. My friend invested at $800, and now he's cashing out. Wow. I think about a few thousand at 800. It's now 18. He cashed out the other day and sent me a lot of smiley faces. When I asked how much he made, he sent smiley faces with a comma and smiley faces in the comma, and I think I get about how much he made now. new GIMP is released. So talking about GIMP, and I was bashing on it, there is a release. And they're doing some more interesting things. They're supposed to work on a non-destructive editing, which I really would look forward to. We have that in Adobe. I believe that's on a roadmap. I see a lot of people, some chatter about it. They're not there yet, but it's on a roadmap, and that would be exciting. Because that's another aggravation I learned. If you resize something and you oops it, and you don't control Z and you just drag it, it actually destroys the graphic to the lower size resolution, which has been kind of an annoyance for me. High speed... delivered with laser beams.
Laser beams.
I know. It's a granted line of sight. It's fiber optics without the optical cable.
What color? Is it red or green?
Ooh, I don't think they specified an article. I don't know.
So can we attach these laser beams to the top of a shark?
Can Shark Linux run with laser beams?
Oh.
We've tied it up. We've brought this full circle. When Tom gets that the review up, we'll discuss if there's laser beams in Shark Linux.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was kind of... thanks, HP. And me and Phil were talking yesterday about this. And adequately advanced ineptitude is indistinguishable from malice.
Like, oh, yes. This was a conversation on BGP.
But it also applies to HP, who left a debugger turned on and accidentally put a keylogger on all their laptops, or at least a big swath of them.
Oh, thanks, HP.
Goodness. Thanks, HP. And
Are they aware of it?
People assume it's malicious. Nope, it's ineptitude. So people in high places with ineptitude becomes like – elevate people will assign agency to it as if it was a like conspiracy. Like, no, the guy forgot to turn the debugger off. Like, yeah, sorry, guys. SSH can do that. Productivity tips for working with remote servers. Someone put together an article, and I'm a heavy SSH user like we just talked about, but there's a lot of things that it goes – I knew about the forwarding and stuff like that, but this breaks down a lot of other functionality that SSH has. I thought it was kind of a neat article. And the last thing I will talk about is the BrickerBot creator issues new warning of IoT. And do you remember the BrickerBot discussion?
Yeah, that was a fun one.
I love this. So he says at one time, I believe he called himself the chemotherapy of the internet.
Yes, he did.
No one.
Well, that's the one where if it has open credentials, then he actually just bricks it so it doesn't become a bot.
You got it.
Yep.
And it feels like this is the right use of vigilantism. Like it seems destructive to brick people's NVRs, which, by the way, we've had clients with this. They've got their NVRs bricked by this, and we're happy because... Well,
let's define bricked. I mean, is it reusable if it's corrected, or is it totally bricked where you lose your investment in that?
Sometimes that. So The problem is they literally will push a firmware to make this device completely a brick, a dead animal. So it just done. It doesn't boot no more. It'll flash a bad firmware on there.
Okay.
And what they're doing is, because the MirrorEye botnet was a real popular one, it's still going around, it will flash its own firmware to it. So it's kind of like, we're going to brick it before it turns into a bot.
The guy who wrote the MirrorEye botnet, I believe. No, sorry. Disregard me. No.
Confidential information. We will strike it from the record. But that was the last of my news stories. But yeah, the BrickerBot thing is kind of novel to me, that we'll see more internet vengeance systems like this. Because I don't know what the solution really is, because there's more and more toasters attacking other toasters on the internet and refrigerators and everything else that we probably don't know why we connected to the internet, but because we can, we did.
Yeah. Well, there's a project out there that's making standards for Linux or for IoT stuff, where like it's secured by default.
But when you're trying to sell $29.95 devices with IoT, these companies are very – now, there is a good news regarding what Tony said. There's a government standard for it, for their purchase, about the way devices have to be maintained for so much time before they can be considered for a purchase. So there is some inroads to that we're seeing. But the consumers is a market of hellish crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of topics on IoT devices going wrong, done wrong.
Disregard my disregard. The MirrorEye botnet. Krebs, Brian Krebs from Krebs on Security, called this about a year ago, the guy who wrote the MirrorEye botnet. This guy was just indicted and pleaded guilty in federal court about this. Yep. So, gotcha.
Yep.
Yeah,
that was a fun day when the MirrorEye botnet came online.
Yeah,
fun is in quotes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Meaning we're just a lot of work to do. All of us. If you touch security, I mean, Tony knows he works for a place that he has to deal with some of these things.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, security updates. You know, patches. You gotta do them on anything, on everything.
Yeah. You know, I didn't have it in our articles because it's a local thing, but did you see that the healthcare company got hit?
Henry Ford?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which is local to us. The Henry Ford Health Systems was tagged. I didn't read the full article on it. I know you sent it to me, but...
They don't use 2FA on their emails, so they just got to peruse emails and become the people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that got them access to a lot more information they should have had access to.
That's actually pretty common, not using 2FA for when you have 30,000 people, in your organization.
I agree.
Always going to be a percentage that won't have it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I agree. Well, we've some of our clients that have been hit have been our best customers for this. We just converted over a large company. Well, not 30,000 people large, but a large client of ours is all 2FA. The owner says, "I don't care. Everyone's getting it, or you can go work somewhere else."
That's good.
Cool.
He laid it down to him. If you don't like it, go.
And people need to understand that. Other places are hiring. It's a minor inconvenience, but what it's going to do for you is save you a lot of headaches as a user later, because your stuff is not going to get compromised as easily.
It's also it also gave us some insight into, because they're on Office 365, and we had a big discussion why we don't like the way they do it compared to the way Google does it better. I'm sorry, Microsoft, catch up. Like, there's better ways to implement it. It's a pain to implement on there compared to the way Google does it. So that's a whole other discussion.
All right.
That's the end of my discussion. I know Phil's got some BGP stuff to talk about, and then Tony's probably got a few things.
Yeah, I've got
And then
a couple.
We have KDE Corner.
We have KDE Corner.
Yeah, we're, ooh.
Back on the 12th, there was a BGP route leak for such high traffic sites such as Google, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, Twitch TV, Riot Games, who makes League of Legends. And this autonomous system was pointed at Russia for a couple minutes.
Uh-huh.
Now, is that a state-sponsored thing? Who knows? But BGP is the backbone of the internet that all the ISPs use to route traffic amongst themselves.
Right.
So if you go on the internet, you are riding on top of BGP routes. Now, the reason why this is pretty scary is because if you control the route to, let's say, DNS servers, you could potentially issue certificates by claiming that, hey, you control a server according to DNS. Mm. So you could become Google.com, or you could become Facebook or Apple.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
So that was rectified, but something that doesn't exist, maybe it does, is live BGP monitoring.
Well, actually, Google has a new version of BGP they're trying to in out. It's complete open source, and it's substantially improved over the current BGP system, including better authentication mechanisms. It's whether or not Google is powerful enough to push it and make it the new standard for how we handle that.
Right.
They're actually working actively on it, and it's a published paper they have, and they're trying to get people to adopt. It's got some other name, but it's a replacement for BGP.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a neat idea.
You know, so the way that BGP works is it's the ISP that controls whether that route is presented or not. So,
and for listeners who might not know what BGP means,
BGP is the Border Gateway Protocol.
I was asking for a friend.
Is a routing. it's the routing protocol that, like Phil said, it runs the internet. Mm-hmm. So it basically allows the route information to pass from one ISP to the other. So, and then once it's, you know, global wide, then everybody knows how to get everywhere. You asked whether it's state sponsored or not, and it really comes down to the ISP. But if the state runs the ISP, the black market of running the ISP or whatever, mm-hmm. then yeah, I mean, it easily could be state sponsored.
I also found the Google article. It's called Project Espresso, which I think is a stupid name because people are going to assume it's Java-based.
Right.
Oh, no.
Good news, it's not. They're using it internally for their network, and here's a number to throw at you. 25% of the internet traffic, the global internet traffic, is Google itself. So Google thinks that they're powerful enough that we got a quarter. No one else has that much traffic besides probably CenturyLink because they do most of the back-end peer-to-peer linking because now that they bought Level 3. So it's going to be interesting. If they get CenturyLink to adopt and Google adopts, that would probably cover 3/4 of the internet. Yeah. So it really doesn't take much to do it. There's not many players in this market.
Wow. Well, the issue is the routers that work with it all have to be updated to accept that protocol. Yeah. They all have to. So if you have, you know, 10 routers out there that can't get it, then whoever relies on those 10 routers will no longer be able to get to the internet.
This is the IPv6 problem.
And yep. Right, exactly.
For BGP.
So,
call it BGP6.
BGP6. <Right. laughs> We'll call it acronym soup.
SOL6.
So it's a combination. They need to convince Cisco and the primary router makers out there to include that protocol in their operating systems. And then convince the people that run those routers to then turn it on. So it's still a big hurdle, even though Google controls half of the internet or runs half the internet. It's still
controls runs. What's the difference?
Or a quarter, you said. Yeah, it's still the other three-quarter is. It's a lot to convince them to get over to it. So likely it's going to run dual stack for a long time, just like IPv4, IPv6, dual stack.
Another super useful thing that's helped me in the past, not exactly related to BGP, is the Hurricane Electric Looking Glass. And that is a fantastic tool for troubleshooting routes, amongst other things, especially when you have multiple data centers and figuring out why certain clients can't connect to certain places. And that is LG.he.net. Use it all the time.
That's neat.
Speaking of search engines, did you guys know that back, I think not on this day, but I think it was yesterday, back in 1995, so it's about 32 years ago? No, that's not. It's 22 years ago. Is that right? Yeah, 22. Alta Vista was established.
Hmm. I remember using that as a little kid
I remember using it
research things.
Yeah, I remember using it. yesterday, I think it was, 22 years ago yesterday. Oh. The first Alta Vista search was done. And it was, what is Google? No, just kidding. So.
That's it for me.
All right. Well, I had an, a couple articles I found. One is interesting. I don't know how popular it's going to get, but EncryptPad. Have you guys heard of that?
Encrypt what?
EncryptPad.
Pad. Oh, I have not.
And it's a notepad editor kind of program that has built-in GPG support. So you can view and edit encrypted text files.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yeah. We're built in like that.
Oh, on a file level.
Oh. Yeah. Well, okay. It's a Linux program, but...
I'm shocked. Just kidding.
And so I found an article that has the how to install it and get it set up on Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I saw that. That was neat. And then Facebook releases a new certificate transparency tools.
Yes, that was super cool.
So a year ago, they released the framework for how it would work. And gave it out to developers to then now create the tool. So now they have tools that are available. I think it said there was 20 different tools that are now available, or it does 20 different things. I don't know. I don't remember now. But it looks really cool. You know, there's a whole API in the background, and it checks against, you know, the different CAs and certs. And I think right now they're saying the one that Google or that Facebook is monitoring, it says 20 publicly available CT logs. That's the certificate transparency logs with over 40,000 certificates observed daily. Or no, an hour, every hour, 40,000 an hour.
So 40,000 certificates served hourly?
No, observed.
Oh, I was trying to do a play on McDonald's.
Like hamburgers.
For those not in the know, certificate transparency is for CAs. When you request a certificate, let's say from Let's Encrypt or Komodo or Amazon or Google or any of the other CAs, your certificate is logged for everybody in the world to see. Now, some may think that this is a privacy problem, but if you want to catch misissuance of certificates, this is the perfect place to do it. It allows analysts to go in and say, hey, there's a problem with this CA or that CA or this other CA or all of these CAs, not implementing the baseline requirements or adhering to web trust. So for certificate transparency, this is going to be required by all CAs to log to a certain number of CT logs sometime in 2018. This is a fantastic thing for the web.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad you were here to add a little bit more to it, because I didn't think of anything else I could say. So I appreciate it, Phil.
Thank you, Phil.
Yeah.
Show up more often, would you? Get that house settled.
Oh, so very, very excited for that. To keep the web encrypted and making sure that everybody's doing the correct thing, CT is the way to go.
What do you think about the DNSSEC and being able to move towards that, which is a slow march?
I will save those comments for off air.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I've got choice comments for that.
All right. I think it might be an interesting discussion at some point when we talk. This is another, we'll spin this into it before we get too off topic, but a Fresh Looks episode on how some of that functioning works between certificate issuance, DNS security, and how all that ties together to make the internet trustworthy in ways. I think this is that would be probably a good deep dive episode that we could do a roundtable on as well. I think a lot of people would probably like to know how all that works as a coherent.
Sure.
We'll script the whole thing.
Yes.
When you don't know how to keep something safe or how to do something, you just throw it at the DNS.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
There you go.
All right.
And then one last thing. I'm sure, Tom, you've heard of this, security.txt. And I've heard a few people talking about it on the podcast recently, and I thought it was really neat that this is and we may have mentioned it a while ago, But it's a file that you add to your website, kind of like robots.txt, where robots would a proper robot, you know, or some search engine scrolling through your website would see this and then decide, and this file would tell it whether you want your website to be cached or not. Well, security.txt is similar, where people going to it, or robots, whatever, looking for information related to security on your website would be able to get to that and then find out what information is needed. So if you have a security problem, then a security researcher would look for this file, and it would spell out who's the proper contacts.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, I like the concept.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought I'd want to throw that in. I was wondering if anybody's already using it out there.
Well, Cisco's not. I just tried theirs. So.
So it's securitytxt.org is the website. And so it gives you information about how to set it up. And there's an example one right there at the beginning of their website. And then actually in a little button that you can create your own security.txt file that they help you create it for you. So it's pretty cool.
I like that concept in there, because that is a question that comes up is, okay, I found a flaw, but I don't know how to directly contact these people about the flaw.
Yeah, exactly.
And part of it is, I believe it says including a PGP in there, because you obviously don't want to pass in plain text, hey, did you know, and here's a flaw in your major router OS system, plain text email is probably not the way to send them that information.
Right. I'm looking at you, F5.
So yeah. You can, yeah, write in it as one of the options is to include your PHP or public PHP key. So PGP somebody can, key. Or PHP, yeah, PGP,
yeah.
And send that on. Yeah, that's awesome. But that's all I had.
Awesome.
Great. Must be time for KDE Corner.
Oh, it absolutely.
I do. I just have, one thing, but there's several sub things to the one thing. And that is that KDE, this is on Friday, KDE ships, they ship their KDE application 17.12, which means Kden Live was just upgraded to 17.12. And one of the things about it now is that it's going to use less memory when handling video projects, which include many images. Default proxy profiles have been refined, and an annoying bug related to jumping 1 second forward when playing backwards has been fixed.
Oh, they fixed it?
Yeah.
I'm going to miss that.
Because you've already put a workaround in place. Now you have to unwork around it. So that also a Dolphin, you're going to now be able to save searches. And I always thought they could limit searches only to certain folders, but they say here that's a part of it. I seem to recall being able to do that with the search component in Dolphin. Renaming files has become easier now. And then also you'll have more file information at your hands, such as the modification date and original URL of downloaded files will be now displayed.
Oh, that's actually really cool.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I go through my downloads folder, I'm like, what is all this garbage?
I do that frequently. So then Ocular's got is gaining support for HI DPI displays and markdown language. Gwenview, the image viewer, can now open and highlight images in the file manager. Zooming is smoother. Keyboard navigation has been improved. So there's a lot of things going on with it. ARCS, you know, the KDE archive zip program called ARC. supports the libzip. Their support for the libzip backend has been improved. And Kate, which is, of course, my favorite text editor, has a new preview plugin that allows you to see a live preview of the text in the final format. Applying any available KParts plugins, for example, Markdown, SVG, .grab, et cetera.
That's nifty.
Yeah, so this also works in KDevelop. So, and there's others. So I'm not going to go through all of them, but I just wanted to give a few of the more that I was familiar with.
I've been really happy. I mean, I switched to KDE Neon, and I've got no complaints. Well, I got one minor one.
And they killed 110 bugs.
Yeah, they did. I updated because one of the bugs one of the things they killed was my third desktop. On my computer, I couldn't have wallpaper art no more. It just wouldn't go. It didn't give an error. You know, it probably did somewhere, but nothing I could find in the logs immediately. But then I updated again like 3 days later when I was like, okay, I'm aggravated. Oh, there's an update. Oh, look, my wallpaper just showed back up. And I didn't change it. It just went back to the way it was. It just wouldn't display wallpaper on one of the monitors. Hmm. But when you set to wallpaper, you could do the process, but it wouldn't set. But it had no errors. It, I just lived without wallpaper on one of my three monitors for a little while. It only lasted like 2 days before they found it and fixed it. So I just trust in the developers. Like, how do I file a bug report? Third monitor won't do wallpaper. I couldn't even know how to file it.
Quantify it, yeah. So anyway, but yeah, so a lot of good stuff. And, you know, I think I've mentioned this before. Their activities function or feature, I at home, I've set up a podcast prep activity. And all I have in there is just the stuff I need for that. Just so that it helps me, because I'm, you know, I have a horrible attention span, and it just helps keep me focused on what I got to do. So, KDE activities.
I'm updating because I see there's new KDE stuff right now. I'm like, so I'm updating on my laptop.
Mm. So that, gentlemen and listeners, is KDE Corner.
Thank you. Right. Are we gonna do music? Or are we gonna?
Yeah.
We gonna sing?
I've got music. If you want to sing, Mary, that's fine.
No, I'm.
Should we do some caroling? No, let's not do that. All right, so the song I found, hold on.
The outgoing music for this week's show.
All right, the song I found is Now and Then by Freaky Clean. So, yeah, that was a little bit of the beginning of that, and we'll have the full song in the edited show. But I found that song from cchits.net, And it's Creative Commons music, like a top 10 or great. Top 15.
And you'll have a link for that, too, if people want to.
That's right. Yep. It's actually, it. I found, it links over to Jamendo.
Oh, Jamendo, oh. Yep.
Cool.
Great yeah. little site.
Yeah, it's a great, for open source or Creative Commons music.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually kind of nervous about playing that one because I hadn't listened to it yet. And there's no...
thought it fit in quite
there was
nicely.
No, like, lyrics, so I couldn't double check it wasn't, like, swearing. So,
oh, okay.
Anyway, so it sounded pretty good.
Yeah. All right, time to wrap.
Time to wrap it up.
Yeah. All right, so you have been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 261.
Net Bias.
And this is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
Phil Parada.
And Tom Lawrence.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.